Someone mentioned to me before class started that you get the government you deserve. We haven't deserved much, in my opinion, over the last century or so. Been a few exceptions. You have no idea the government we're about to deserve in the next few years. It's all a part of the fact that Jesus Christ controls history. And He controls history based on the thinking of those who are members of the royal family of God. And as members of the royal family, we have responsibilities. And with those responsibilities, we have, therefore, the opportunity to determine the ebb and flow of human history. Now, regardless of any of the results of the most recent election, they're really insignificant to what I'm saying here. Because really nothing much has changed. But the thing that interests me is that we are now discussing playing Vietnam all over again. We sent men in harm's way in order to do a job. We have a volunteer military. Anyone who is physically fit and willing will be accepted in many of the various branches. And they must select which one they choose to serve. Now, along that way, they eventually may be asked by the commander-in-chief to go into harm's way. And they willingly do this, and they are the best trained, best equipped military in the history of the world, in my opinion, when you take a look at the kind of toys they have to play with. If I were a future president and international events appeared to threaten the United States of America that seemed to require military solution, I would ask the networks to break usual tradition and allow me to speak to what is widely called the American people. And I would tell them that although that we are under assault and that many of our citizens had been killed and that we knew who the culprits were, that I was not going to do anything about it. They were all going to go back home and we're going to watch 24 or Lost or whatever interests us. But we're not going to any longer put our volunteer military into harm's way to have them murdered, killed, slaughtered, bleed, injured, and then after a little while, once we get tired of it, to call them home and call it off. And that if we were to send them in harm's way, that there would be such a hue and cry and over concern for how we treat the enemy that we couldn't fight the war. If you've got a gun and you can't use the trigger, it is useless. There was a time in our nation's history when we went to war, we decided to get it over with as quickly as possible by all means necessary. War is a horrible thing. No one wants it. No one desires it. But when you are attacked, then honorable men with spritzatura decide the best thing to do is to protect the country. There are men, elderly people, women, children that need to be protected. And therefore you do the hard thing and you send men into battle. There is a war that was begun in 1950 that has yet to be completed. It has gone on for 56 years. We still have men in harm's way in that area. And it's called the Korean War. I would like for you to know what the casualty rate is there. Over a period of the first 4 years of that war, 36,516 U.S. soldiers were killed. 103,284 were wounded. And that occurred between 1950 and 1953. There is a man that I'd like to draw to your attention today. He is a gentleman who won the Medal of Honor in Korea. And I would like to relate to you his story as a way to salute the veterans on this Veterans Day weekend. The man's name is Ron Rosser. I've got pictures of him. He was a master sergeant when he retired from the military. This is a photograph of him at the Mott's Military Museum in Columbus, Ohio. This is the director, Warren Mott's, and this is Ron Rosser. He won the Medal of Honor as a corporal. This picture on the back wall here I have placed here so you can see him at the age at which he served. And the story that you're about to hear gives the details of how he was awarded the Medal of Honor. It appears in Military History, the October 2004 issue, beginning on page 34. It is written by Ed McCall. And it's a Q&A. McCall will ask questions and then Rosser will respond. What unit were you assigned to in Korea? I had been in heavy mortars during my first enlistment, so I was assigned to a heavy mortar company. When I reported, the captain said that he was going to make me a first gunner. I told him that I was not going down to a platoon as I was going up on the line. And he said, no, you're not. You're going down to the third platoon as a first gunner. I looked him right in the eye and said, Captain, I can't think of a way you can stop me. I had gone through a lot of trouble to get there, and I was not going to let some captain stop me from going on the line. My brother had died as an infantry soldier, and I did not want to be back dropping rounds down a tube. And he looked at me kind of startled and said that the only people the company had up on the line were forward observers and radio telephone operators. And I told him that I was the best forward operator he had ever seen in his life. And he then said that we did not need any forward operators. And one of the other guys present says, hey, Friedel just lost another radio man. And I then said that I am the best radio operator you have ever seen. So they sent me up to the line as a radio operator. Friedel got wounded shortly after that, and I became the forward observer. You must have gotten hit quite often, too. I got hit several times. Nicks, I call them. I never took a hard hit. I could have gone off the line to get the wounds treated and get a Purple Heart. But if you get two or three Purple Hearts, you're pulled off the line. And I did not want to get off the line. I kind of liked it up there, to tell you the truth. What type of equipment would you take on a patrol? I carried an M2 carbine, a carbine with 10 or 12, 15 round magazines, about 3 or 4 30 round magazines, 1 white phosphorus grenade, and a couple of frags. I also carried loose carbine ammunition in my pocket to refill my magazines. The order that day on January 12th of 1952, January in Korea, was to wear the leather combat boots. But I said, the hell with that, and wore my heavy insulated boots. We were wearing field jackets with liners, long johns, a shirt, and as much as we could wear under the field jacket. We did not want to get too bulky because you would get too sweaty. We did not carry any food or water with us. It was not worthwhile carrying water as it would freeze solid. It was about 20 degrees below zero, not counting the wind chill. If you got thirsty, you grabbed a handful of snow or ice. How did the patrol start out on January 12th? I was in the briefing where they told us what they expected. The intelligence officer gave us his update and started painting this rosy picture of how we were going to go out behind hill number 472 and swarm up the mountain, as there were only a few Chinese there. We were to grab a few prisoners, destroy their winter installations, and then get out of there. I listened to this bull for a while and finally put up my hand. The intel officer said, yes, Corporal Rosser. And I said, sir, what you have been telling us is not true. For Christ's sakes, there's at least a battalion out there. My regimental commander asked me what I meant, and I told him that I had been out there with company I, and that the volume of fire and number of troops coming off there was in battalion strength. I told them that it was a hornet's nest and that they should not be telling these people that there were only a handful of Chinese there. My regimental commander told me to shut up. And I said, yes, sir, and sat down. The next day, just before dawn, L Company started through the barbed wire. We dropped off a platoon in front of the hill that was going to attack at daylight as a diversion. The rest of us circled around the hill and stopped about 2 miles behind enemy lines. We were in a valley that paralleled the ridge of Hill 472. So we were under heavy fire and were taking casualties the entire way. What did you do with the casualties? The kind of casualties we were taking was weird, as we started losing our platoon sergeants and squad leaders. We finally got within 60 or 70 yards from the top of the hill, and there was a platoon in front of us leading the assault. I was with the company commander since I had the only working radio. Some heavy fire was going past us about 30 or 40 yards above our heads, and all at once this wild-eyed kid came running down the hill without his rifle or anything. He ran up to the company commander and said, "They're all gone, Captain." The captain said, "Who's all gone? Do you mean your squad?" He said, "No, sir, everybody." The Chinese had pinned them down, gone in from both sides, and bayoneted them. The company commander and I were now leading the assault platoon. In a short time, the company commander was hit in the face. The artillery forward observer lieutenant, we'll hear from him later, was hit in the shoulder, and my radio man was also hit. The whole thing looked hopeless to me, and I knew that it was just a matter of time before I got hit too. I got to my radio and called the regimental commander. I told him who I was and said, "Sir, L Company is down to about 35 effectives. The NCOs and officers are gone, and we're about out of ammunition. Request orders." I was trying to get permission to get us out of there because only an ignorant man would stay there. They had grazed fire all over the area. I could not look up and see 5 machine guns bunkered in. The regimental commander wanted to know if any of the officers were alive, and I told him that the company commander was still alive, and he wanted to talk to him, so I took my radio over there. The regimental commander told the captain to reorganize his men and make one final attempt to take the objective. The captain just said, "Yes, sir," and then handed the handset back to me. The captain looked up and got the most hopeless look on his face. He really could not lead an attack with his wound. So I told him that I would take them up the hill for him. And he asked me what I was going to do. And I told him that I was going to go straight in shooting. He said that we're not going to make it, but I told him that we would give it a try. After I told my radio operator to keep calling in fire, I got all the men I could find together just under the ridge where we were protected some. I lined them up, told them who I was, that I was going to lead them up, and that they had to do All they had to do was follow me. And I put the men who could not walk out on the flanks to provide some supporting fire. After everything was ready, I told them that we would jump up, fire a few rounds straight to our front, and pin the Chinese down. We would then rush the trench line, jump in the trench, kill the Chinese, and then we would have some cover. Pretty simple. Then he said, "Let's go," and jumped up. A couple of the guys close to me jumped up with me, and I charged up the hill as fast as I could go. I got a few feet from the trench, looked back, and realized I was all by myself. The guys who had tried to follow me were stretched out on the ground. I was by myself and knew that no one was going to make it across to help me. Some mighty strange thoughts come to your head about then. I thought to myself that I had gone to a lot of trouble to get here, and I might as well make it pay. So I let out a war whoop and straddled the trench. Right before me were 2 Chinamen. I stuck my carbine in one's ear and blew out the other one. the whole top of his head bounced from the impact. The parts of his head were blown all over me. The other guy slammed his burp gun into my back, and I spun around to get him. I could just feel in my mind his bullets go through my stomach. I was screaming as I spun around and I shot him through the neck. He dropped his burp gun and lunged forward. He grabbed one of my legs. I knocked him off of me and shot him in the heart. I spun back around, fired a burst down the trench and jumped into it. I went down the trench, shooting the Chinese at point-blank range. I would run into one, shoot him or butt-stroke him or whatever it took to take him out. Two of them dived into a machine gun bunker. I knew I could not get by them without being shot. I reached inside my coat for a white phosphorus grenade, crawled on top of the bunker, pulled the pin, let the spoon pop off, waited a couple of seconds, and threw it in. When it went off, the Chinese started screaming. Two came out, and I shot both of them in the head to put them out of their misery as they were on fire. I thought, I really need some help up here. I crawled to the very top of the bunker, stood up, and started waving and yelling for some other guys to come over. Question, how far were the others from the Chinese trenches? I would say about 40 yards. They were still under heavy fire, including mortar fire and hand grenades. I could hear the bullets whipping by me and hand grenades going off near me. They were actually trying to hit me with a 76 millimeter high velocity gun that was only about 75 yards away. I could see them swing the gun around to aim at me, and the gunner raised his arm to jerk the lanyard. When he would do that, I would move and then jump up after the shell went by and shoot at him with my carbine. I could chase them off for a little bit, but they would come back as soon as I would stop firing. Did anyone try to come across to help you? I was not worried about surviving because you did not think about surviving in close combat. In close combat, survival time is measured in seconds. At the corner of the trench, I saw about 35 Chinese charging straight down the trench. My first thought was to get out of there, as I knew I could not stop them. My second thought was to try and hold them back to give the other guys a chance to come over and help me. But I knew that if I tried that, they would just flank and grenade me. So I figured that I might as well keep going. I let out another war whoop and ran down the trench straight at them. That scared the hell out of them. And they stopped dead cold. 35 of them. As I ran down the trench, I was firing but not hitting anything. The first guy was firing at me with a burp gun, and I could feel his bullets tearing through my clothes. When I got about 10 feet from him, he lost his nerve and tried to get back around the guy behind him while the second man was trying to shoot me with his burp gun. The guys behind them were throwing hand grenades that were going off all around me. I just kept closing in on them, and all of a sudden they all turned around and started running. I chased them for about 4 or 5 steps and then stopped, raised my carbine, and started shooting them in the back of the head. They turned a corner and headed toward two huge log bunkers. I could still see their heads as they were bobbing up and down, running through the trench, so I kept shooting at their bobbing heads. I was able to drop several of them that way. About then, I started running out of ammunition. So I started backing up, and I finally got back to where I had first entered their trenches and jumped back into the trench. Question, you were outside the trench? I had jumped out of the trenches right after the Chinese had run away from me so that I could get a better shot at them. When I was backing up, I stayed on top of the trenches as I could more easily, could move easier on top of them and therefore get a better aim at them. What happened after you jumped back into the trench? A Chinaman came right in alongside of me and I shot him. Just as he fell over, another Chinaman raised up from another trench and threw a grenade at me. It hit my shin and dropped on my foot. I dived over the Chinaman I just shot to get him between the grenade and me. Just as I went over him, the grenade went off and blew part of the heel off my boot. I bounced back up and the guy who threw the grenade had raised up to get a better look. He was far enough up that I was able to put 4 or 5 rounds in his belly. Then, that put me out of ammunition completely. I turned around and ran back down the hill to our position. I started down the hill with the Chinese firing at me from the trench I just left. The artillery forward observer, who had been hit in the shoulder, grabbed an M1 rifle off one of the dead men. Any of the Chinese who ran out in the open to shoot or bayonet me, he shot and killed. How was he able to do this after being shot in the shoulder? He could still use his arm some. Let me tell you something. When you're in a situation like that, you don't pay a lot of attention to your wounds if they're not completely incapacitated. I saw a lot of men fighting there with legs partly gone and other serious wounds. Did this lieutenant survive? Yes, he did. When I got close to him, he said, "Soldier, what the heck is your name?" I stopped and said, "My name is Rosser, sir." And he said, "Do you know what the heck you're doing?" And yes, I said, "Yes, sir. I am killing these varmints as fast as I can." "But I am about out of ammunition and I need to get some more." He looked at me real funny and said, "By God, I want to shake your hand." After that, I picked up the wounded soldier and back up and walked him down to our lines. I put a compress on his wound to stop some of his bleeding. I started gathering up ammunition and was able to get some magazines off my radio operator. I filled up all the empty magazines I had and got about 13 or more grenades. I hung my carbine over my shoulder, put a grenade in each hand, pulled both pins, and started back up the hill. Weren't the Chinese shooting at you? I was watching them, and I could see in their eyes that they could not believe I was coming back up. One Chinaman started to rise up to shoot me, and as he did, I released the spoon on one of the grenades and threw it at him. Instead of shooting me, he stood there and watched that grenade to see where it was going. It went right into the trench. It went off. And as I went over the trench, I kicked the spoon off the other grenade, dropped it in on them as a few were still kicking. I was after those two big bunkers. About how far was it from the first trench to the bunkers? About 40 to 50 yards at the most. I chased the Chinese into both of the bunkers and shot a burst through one of the doors to chase them away from it. I took a white phosphorus grenade and threw it in after holding it for a couple of seconds. It went off and they were hollering like hell. I pulled out 2 frags and threw them in. After that, there was no more noise coming from that bunker. They were trying to come out of the other bunker, so I started shooting through the door of that one and to chase them back away from it. Then I did the same thing with that bunker, a white phosphorus followed by 2 frags. I started running all over that hill, shooting and raising hell in general. I would just see a part of a man and shoot at him. One guy threw a grenade at me that wounded me in the hand. That irritated me so much that I took off after him howling like a madman. Caught up with him and shot him down. When I was chasing him, I probably ran past at least 20 Chinese, but they didn't even shoot at me. After I shot him, I stopped and looked around and realized that the Chinese were coming at me from everywhere. No matter which way I went, I was going to have to fight my way through them. I got myself a white phosphorus grenade, pulled the pin on it, kicked the spoon off, waited a couple of seconds, and threw it up in the air at an angle from me. when it exploded, the phosphorus came down like rain. I was on the outer periphery of it, but the Chinese in the direction I threw it would not get away from it. Once the phosphorus hit the ground, I took off running through it, shouting as I ran. I ended up at the spot where I'd entered the Chinese lines. I had run out of ammunition and hand grenades, and all of a sudden this Chinaman ran right up in front of me and was no more than 5 or 6 feet away. I was down in a trench and he was standing over me with a submachine gun pointed right at my face. I was out of ammunition, but he didn't know it. I took my carbine and pointed it at his face. For a couple of seconds, we stood there and looked at each other. I let out a blood-curdling scream, and he turned around and ran away. I bluffed him good, and after he ran away, I started back to my own lines. Why didn't you use one of the Chinese weapons? Their grenades were not any good. I saw some of the Chinese pull the string on their grenades, and the grenades went off in their hands. I just did not trust their stuff. I did not even bother to pick up any of their small arms, as I liked my stuff too much. The thought of using their stuff never even crossed my mind. What happened after you got back to the American lines? I picked up another wounded man on my way back. The Chinese were starting to build back on the top of the hill again. I told the captain that he had better get the company out of here or it would be wiped out. He asked me if I could get the men out, and I told them that I would do the best I could. I asked someone to give me some more grenades, and I went back up the hill. I went past the lieutenant again, and he was still banging away with that rifle. I got to the Chinese trenches and started throwing hand grenades to chase them away from that edge of the hill. I ran out of grenades, and as I had not brought any ammunition with me, I went back down the hill. I got some ammunition and started back up the hill the fourth time. This time, they started shooting at me with a machine gun. I was rolling and dodging until I finally got to some cover and said, enough is enough, and that I was getting the hell out of there. I found the captain and told him that I was going to get everyone off the mountain. He said, okay. I got all the men who could still walk and function and told them to get all the ammunition that they could find off the dead and wounded. They were to hold the best they could while I got the men back down the hill. I made every man who could walk carry a wounded man or a dead man down that mountain. If he was capable of going back up, I made him go up and bring another man back down. We carried all of our dead and wounded off but four. When we got to the bottom of the mountain, we loaded the dead and wounded on the four tanks that we had been sent to help us with the intelligence and reconnaissance platoon. It took a couple of trips to get everyone back. We started out as a reinforced company, but ended up as a shot-up platoon. It is amazing that you only received two minor wounds during all of that. The grenades that landed close to me, I would kick away. If I was in a trench and one landed near me, I would dive out of the trench. I did not stay still, but kept moving all the time. It was as if the enemy was moving in slow motion while I was moving in fast motion. My mind was perfectly clear the entire time. Weren't you ever afraid? Not really. I knew that if I stayed at it long enough, I would get killed. One question I have never been able to answer was why I survived and so many other guys did not. I had two radios torn off me and my helmet shot off once. One time, a 120-millimeter mortar round landed 3 feet away. I rolled into a trench and the explosion collapsed the trench on top of me. To what do you credit your survival? First of all, if you see someone doing something stupid, learn from them and don't do what they're doing. Second, I never worried about the things I could not control. Also, keep away from any enemy soldier who is too dumb to run away and may just kill you. If you ever get the enemy running, keep them running and don't give them the chance to come back at you. Don't be stupid. Don't be afraid. There's nothing really to be afraid of. Now that's how you fight a war. You had one man doing all of this. You get a whole army doing that, then your wars don't last very long. I want to take just a few more seconds here, and I want to read his citation for the Congressional Medal of Honor. His name is Ronald E. Rosser. He, at the time, was a corporal in the United States Army, 38th Infantry Regiment, 2nd Infantry Division, in the vicinity of Pongili, Korea, and the date of this event is 12 January 1952. Rosser is from Columbus, Ohio. The citation reads as follows. Corporal Rosser distinguished himself by conspicuous gallantry above and beyond the call of duty while assaulting assaulting heavily fortified enemy hill positions, Company L, 38th Infantry Regiment. It was stopped by a fierce automatic weapon, small arms, artillery, and mortar fire. Corporal Rosser, a forward observer, was with the lead platoon of Company L when it came under fire from two directions. Corporal Rosser turned his radio over to his assistant and, disregarding the enemy fire, charged the enemy positions armed with only carbine and a grenade. There were several grenades, and he had a lot of ammunition, as you recall. At the first bunker, he silenced its occupants with a burst from his weapon. Gaining the top of the hill, he killed two enemy soldiers and then went down the trench, killing five more as he advanced. He then hurled his grenade into a bunker and shot two other soldiers as they emerged. Having exhausted his ammunition, he returned through enemy fire to obtain more ammunition and grenades and charged the hill once more. Calling on others to follow him, he assaulted two more enemy bunkers. Although those who attempted to join him became casualties, Corporal Rosser once again exhausted his ammunition, obtained a new supply, and returning to the hilltop a third time, hurled grenades into the enemy positions. During this heroic action, Corporal Rosser single-handedly killed at least 13 of the enemy. After exhausting his ammunition, he accompanied the withdrawing platoon and, though himself wounded, made several trips across open terrain still under enemy fire to help remove other men injured more seriously than himself. This outstanding soldier's courageous and selfless devotion to duty is worthy of emulation by all men. He has contributed magnificently to the high traditions of the military service. A lot of people have served this country in warfare from the beginning of the War of Independence all the way down to the present conflict in Iraq. Yesterday was Veterans Day. There were, across the country, many celebrations and many salutes to those who have served and are serving. And as we gather here today, I've taken this first hour to read this story of this man. A man who took it upon himself to go up a hill four times to fight the enemy. He was aggressive. He was not afraid. He didn't worry about anything that he could not control. And he did his duty. And when he got done and got the Congressional Medal of Honor, he was very humble about it. The man you see on the wall here is still alive, and he is a magnificent example of all of the veterans that have served this country over 230 years. We salute them this morning. And if you would join me for a moment of silent prayer in remembrance of these men, those who've died, those who've been wounded, those who've served, those who are serving, and then we will break for our first session. Shall we pray? Heavenly Father, we are indeed grateful to you for the phenomenal prosperity that we enjoy in this client nation. On occasion, the trends of history bring upon our shores and into our periphery predator nations, predator operations that would seek to destroy what we have accomplished here through your grace. It is your desire in the church age to have a functional client nation. One that protects the sanctity of your word, that expresses an accurate gospel to the lost, that sends out missionaries to foreign nations, that communicates truth to those who are positive, and provides a sanctuary for the Jewish diaspora. It is our prayer, Father, that you would maintain this client nation in this time of historical downtrends, so that the people who choose to follow, understand, and apply your word might have the opportunity that is necessary for learning. That peace would prevail in the client nation. That you would protect us from our enemies, even during a time of poor leadership. For Father, it is the battle that is before us, and the battle is the Lord's. We honor those who have served this nation in combat and in other areas of service. We salute those who have fallen, those who have served, those who are presently serving. It is our prayer you would be with each and every one of them, and that what they do during their time of assignment would be a credit to this client nation and would contribute to its ultimate survival. We thank you for the magnificent grace that you have showered upon us. May we take seriously what we do here, for we are the unseen cause that maintains the sanctity of this client nation until you choose to advance it or demote it. Thank you for your grace as we lift our prayer in the name of our Lord and Savior, who is indeed Yahweh Sabaoth, the Lord of the armies. Amen.